Thanks for tuning in to the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic, where we inspire, educate, and provide advice and insights around those who are in the sports business and entertainment industry. Please follow us on LinkedIn and Instagram at Life in the Front Office. And don't forget to follow and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Lastly, get your 15% off Suja at sujaorganic.com with the code LIFO, L-I-F-O. And enjoy today's episode. Welcome to today's episode on the Life in the Front Office podcast presented by Suja Organic. Excited for another episode in our Ohio University Sports Administration series, Life After Court Street. We are joined by Kevin Griffin, the Associate Vice President of Brand Engagement Services and Partnerships at Ohio State University. I should say the Ohio State University. And We're going to get into a little bit about his career, what it's like to look to work on the brand side, as well as, you know, the university front and what's going on in college athletics. Also joined by my co-host, Laura Waters Brown, and we're excited to get this underway. So, Kevin, welcome. And why don't you just kick us off with a little bit of how you got to where you are and your career path after playing football at the Ohio State University?
Yeah, Jake and Laura, thank you for having me, and thank you for doing this in terms of just having this podcast as a way to educate folks who want to get involved in this crazy industry that we call sports and entertainment. So thank you for your time in doing this. Career path is pretty straightforward. When I was a student athlete at Ohio State, I thought I wanted to be a coach and an athletic director in high school. And then I got involved in my major, which was journalism and communications at Ohio State, and that led me to a student worker position and an internship with our sports information department at Ohio State. So after I'd finished my workouts in the wintertime, I'd run over to St. John Arena and I'd work with our sports information department. There are some folks there that some of this on this show might know. There's a guy named Pat Chun and Diana Sabo and a whole bunch of folks who are now sitting ADs that we've stayed friends with, but we were all in this very small office in St. John Arena working in sports information. And that's where I met a guy named Andy Geiger, who was our athletic director at the time, and a number of other folks. And that really kindled the fire to want to work in sports. When I finished school, my girlfriend, who was my wife in college, we got married in college. We moved back to Seattle to get our career started. And I started coaching high school football, actually, and then working on the side for an agency that was a part of IMG, which was part of Host Communications, then got bought by IMG. And so I was doing that. I was in the technology space, the agency space, and sports. And then our state high school association in Ohio, that would be the OHSAA. In Washington, it's called the WIAA. Their executive director liked me for whatever reason. And he said, hey, I'd like you to come on board and I'd like you to lead our sponsorships, six different sports, have admin oversight for them, and then lead all of our broadcast partnerships. So negotiating the TV and radio deals for state championships. And so I did that. I became the youngest assistant executive director in the country working in high school sports at our state high school association. It was a great job. I thought I knew the rules of different sports that I've been involved in. And then you actually have to write the rules, and that's really hard. And then after that, I met a guy named Todd Lewicki, who is the CEO of the Seattle Seahawks. And if you're familiar with this industry, the Lewicki brothers, Tim and Todd, are legendary. And I said, I got to go work for this guy. So after 4 years of my time at the State High School Association, I fell into a job with the Seattle Seahawks, took a pay cut to work in professional sports. I had to talk to my wife about that, who was pregnant with our second child at the time, and said, hey, I got to bet on myself here. And she's like, go for it. And so we did. And I took a job as the fan development director for the Seattle Seahawks. And I was at the Seattle Seahawks for 9 years. We also started the Seattle Sounders, so I had responsibility for both clubs. Incredible opportunity to start a franchise, particularly one that was as successful or has been successful as the Seattle Sounders. My last couple years with the Seahawks, I was working for a guy named Pete Carroll, doing a lot of projects for Coach Carroll, working with Commissioner Roger Goodell on a number of really cool projects. And so just had a blast during my time with the Seahawks. Then I was recruited There are seven of us that were recruited away from our NFL teams and some NBA teams to go help the new ownership of the Cleveland Browns. So that happened in 2013. So I became our head, our vice president of marketing, media, and fan experience for the Cleveland Browns. I did that for 3 years. That's when Laura joined the squad. We were so fortunate to have her join us with the Cleveland Browns. Then I went to go work in the agency space, and I did that for 5 years. I was a senior vice president of marketing strategy for a company called AdCom in Cleveland, and then I was elevated to the president of the company. We're working through a succession plan of what that would look like for me to take over as the CEO. Loved my time in the agency space, a lot of learning that I needed to do, and a lot of success in that space. Absolutely loved it. And then a friend asked me to help her with a search for a senior role for DC United. Her name is Danita Johnson. She's the president of business operations for DC United. And through that process, she called me and says, "Hey, can you just take the job?" And I said, "No, Danita, I can't take the job. I like what I'm doing here. I've got a great gig at AdCom and president of the company." And she said, "Well, just can you just consider it?" So I talked to my wife, and so I took the job. Is a senior vice president of brand and marketing strategies for DC United. And I commuted back and forth between Cleveland and DC. So basically on an airplane twice a week, back and forth. And so Danita and Jason, who's the owner, we were the number one and number two executives for the company, and we're helping build DC United and make some changes that needed to be made. And then I got the phone call that I didn't want to receive, which was from Ohio State. And Zen called and said, "Hey, Gene Smith asked us to give you a call about this job." And as soon as I heard Gene Smith's name, and I've known Gene for a long time, I'm like, I have to listen. So I took a job as the Associate Vice President of Brand Engagement Services and Partnerships. We can talk about what that is. And that's where I am today. So I've been at Ohio State for almost 2 years now.
What a crazy run. I think, and obviously a lot more ahead of you, but when you think about just even back to your first gig, right? To think about, okay, are these opportunities that I'm about to go get possible? And even just to go to a place like AdCom to even know what that is when you're in the industry. And how did you go about just educating yourself about what opportunities were out there and people that you should be connected to? Not because of the next job, but just genuinely because you want to learn, right? And you want to understand how this, to your point earlier, crazy world of sports and entertainment works.
Such a great question, Jake. For me, I've been really fortunate to be in the rooms of people who get to make these decisions and for whatever reason, be able to prove myself while in those rooms. And so, my time with the Seahawks and the Browns, I was hiring agencies all the time and working with agencies. So I got a good chance to look and see what the agency life was like. And I got a chance to see what good agencies were and what bad agencies were. Right. And so during that time, I always thought to myself, I probably need to get this experience. It was really important to me in my deep down inside that I felt like I was missing something. And so when I left the Browns, the agency step was what I thought I needed. And it quite frankly was exactly what I needed to hone in on some deeper level of creative development, some deeper level of strategy and execution. And then also seeing the broader picture of working with huge Fortune 500 companies. So Cleveland Clinic, Sherwin-Williams, Giant Eagle, Goodyear. When you're sitting in the room with the CEOs and the CMOs of these companies and you're talking about their business and they have to trust you or they trust you to move their business forward, that's a really empowering position to be in. And it's a lot of responsibility. So to answer your question, I just always think about it in terms of like, what am I missing in my quiver of skills that I need to add into that? And just being really cognizant of understanding that. And then hopefully trying to find a place that will allow you to build upon those skills and then practice them and get better, become a domain level expert in that specific space.
Kevin, there's a lot of, you gave a lot of nuggets. First, I think I've mentioned this on the podcast. I think you have to speak to the power of your own personal brand and names, right? Like, you mentioned Gene Smith called, and at whatever it was, when Gene Smith calls, it doesn't matter what, like, whatever it is, you just do it because of who is calling you and who is giving the information, which puts the emphasis or power behind developing a brand of trust and authenticity, which I think is something that you've done a great job of. Talk a little bit about, you mentioned when you went to college, you had a plan as far as what you thought you wanted to do. And then it sounds like throughout your career, that idea kind of pivoted into more of less about what the end goal looks like and more about what do I need to learn? Do you think that, or have you adjusted your approach to what success looks like to you and how you kind of get to the end, or you know, do you have a, how do you answer the question that you all, we always get of, okay, what's the ultimate end goal for you?
I love the question. It makes me a bit emotional hearing it from you because, you know, at the end of the day, where I am in my career, it is about people and it is about watching people that you care about and you've worked with grow, watching them have success. So my success, my happiness, my joy comes from watching someone like you, Laura, that I've known since you were in grad school and watch you grow in your career. Or watching someone that is on my staff when I arrived at Ohio State, the team wasn't, they weren't in a good spot. And so to see them today executing at the level in which they execute and feeling totally connected to the mission of what we're doing and to have the confidence that they have that they didn't when I walked in the door, that's all that matters to me. At the end of the day, that's more important than a paycheck. That's more important than recognition for myself, is to see other people grow. So that's for me, when someone says kind of, what do you want to do when you grow up? It's always about building winning teams in cultures where people can thrive and have dignity in the work that they do. When you do that, by the way, you win in everything else, right? And by the way, that's, at least in my opinion, that's more important than any other metric that you're going to put up on the board. So that certainly has changed for me. But again, to the first part of your question, I think there was an epiphany for me at some point in time, 9 years of the Seahawks, while I loved my time and the people I work with, there was an opportunity where I had to say, like, look, am I still learning? And I remember the painful conversation I had to have with our team president, and it didn't go well, quite frankly. It did not go well at all. Like, look, man, I'm not learning here anymore in this specific position. And I don't know if I articulated it the way that I needed to with him at the time, but I wasn't. And when you stop learning, I think you stop growing. And that was my biggest fear, is that I'm not going to grow anymore. And so there was opportunity to make some change. But to your point, like, learning, at least in my mind, equates to growth. And when that stops, you're probably in a little bit of trouble.
When you talked about what gaps you had or what things you were looking for, how did you know? Because sometimes they're blind spots, right? Sometimes there are things you just don't know. What conversations did you have? Did you have certain mentors that you leaned on to say, hey, you may not see this now, but in 5 years, you're going to need this? And to your point about going and getting these different experiences, there isn't that, you know, to Laura's question, like that one end goal. It's just like, well, I don't really know where this is going to go, but it's at least going to provide me this. And then we'll see what relationships, you know, transpire from there.
Yeah. I'm not sure how to answer the question other than you have to, you know, you constantly evolve, right? I think that for me, it's kind of constantly evolving and having a point of view. A lady named Don Hudson was a CMO from the NFL, and we were working on some projects together. And I'll never forget her saying, hey, Kevin, you know, it's really important as a marketing leader or as a business leader for you to have a point of view, right? And I kept thinking about, why did Don just say that to me? And the reason she said that to me is because what she saw was I was functioning, right? I was functioning, getting things done, doing it, delivering results, but I didn't have a point of view. Like, where is the business going in 5 years? And how do you position yourself to think about that, right? And are you positioning yourself and your team and your staff and the resources and all that you need to stay ahead of the curve? And so that was like a really great moment, and something that I learned from Don. And so I've learned that having different voices and different points of view for people to share that with you and feed into you, at least for me, it's helped me grow and evolve along the way. Whether it was time with Todd Leiwicki, who's freaking brilliant at all that he does, or watching Gene Smith now and the way he handles people and his incredible IQ and EQ and the way he manages change management, whether it's spending time with Pete Carroll and understanding the power of performance and how do you motivate people, or the experience I just shared with you with Don Hutson, or on and on and on. I can share that with you from people that I've worked with or worked for, and people who have worked for me that I've learned a ton from, right? I'll give you one example. I'll never forget a moment in time when overseeing our content team, and the person overseeing our content said, "Hey, Kevin, I want you to come downstairs and look at our production room." And I'm like, "Okay." And he said, "So you keep telling me that we need to do this, 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 and this for outputs." And I'm like, "Yeah." And I know, he said, "And I know you're getting that from our team president." I said, "Yeah." He said, "But I want you to look again." And I said, "Okay, what am I looking at?" He said, "Look at the avids that we have to edit. Look at the equipment that we have. Look at the lenses that we have for our cameras. Look at how many people we have, and then think about what you're asking us to do." And I'll never forget the epiphany moment. I'm like, you know what? He's 100% right. We're asking the impossible from this individual and this team without actually giving them the right equipment and the right environment and the right tools to actually deliver on that process. That helped me understand my job as a leader was to understand that intuitively and then go fight for them. It's not that they don't want to do it. They just couldn't, right? They just literally could not do it. And so the role of a leader, the role of a manager and a leader is to understand what your team is trying to get accomplished, and then go get them the resources, give them the freedom, but understand what they need to be successful. If you can do that, at least I found, if I can do that, then that's winning at least half the battle.
Can concur. Do believe in that process. I think a big theme of what you're saying, Kevin, is humility. And I think you have to have the humility to take a step back and listen, and to really understand your team, the people, the ecosystem, the folks that are around you, so that you can truly advocate for them and help them to get the best out of them, which I think in sports, specifically in sports, is a really hard skill set to come by, because I think there's a certain type of person that gets, when you get into sports, I think you inevitably come in with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder, a little bit of a, I'm the best. I'm the cream of the crop. It's already a tough industry to get into. So I got into it. So I must be doing something right. But what you're saying is you have to have that moment of humility to realize I don't know everything. And it's okay to not know everything, but I need to ask, I need to listen, and then I need to advocate for the people, because the people will do the work. And if I think one of the things that I've learned from you that's been very helpful in my career is, if you know a little bit about what everybody does and the challenges that they face, it helps you to be a better leader, but it also helps you to understand what it takes to do something that you're asking them to do. So now you're building a better relationship because you're not asking the impossible of them, right? You're not saying, I need you to do this. I need you to do it by tomorrow. You understand that this is actually a 6-week project, and there's a reason for that. So I want to just double tap into that as well. But do you think that you and your thought process or your commitment to team and your commitment to growth started from being a student athlete and like really taking that team approach to career or to, you know, life after sports?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. So Laura, I didn't always know that, right? So this is years of practicing, right? Like I've been fortunate to be in leadership roles for a long time. You learn along the way and you have some wounds, right? You didn't learn, like you got to go through some of that pain. And so some of that pain is I'm a very ambitious person in that I want to do a lot, and want our teams to do a lot, and I want to win. And I'm fortunate to say this, I sound like a jerk saying this, but my teams win. We do great. We have incredible results. But I had to learn that sometimes I'm putting pressure on people to get things done they simply can't, because of the story I told you earlier. So the step back, and especially the time working in the agency space, helped me understand, how do you allocate the right amount of resources? How do you take a step back and ask the right questions? What are the frameworks and processes that you have in place to actually set yourself up for success, yourself being your entire team? And then when you're really good at leading and managing, and I'm fortunate to do this, you're leading and managing influence across a lot of different things, right? It's not one team, right? It's multiple areas of the business and function. I had to come to a realization, like, if I'm going to scale myself, because that's what it comes down to, scaling myself means having everything else in place so that other people can do that. So I'll give you a really interesting example. I'm not always a great explainer, but I'm a really good modeler. So I wish we were doing a television commercial. First time Ohio State has done a television commercial, I think in a long, very long time, if not ever. And so I went through the entire process myself, right? The research, the credit. I always had somebody with me because I wanted to teach them. Here's how you do the research. Here's how you do the insights. Here's how you do the entire process. Here's how you develop the media plan. Here's how you negotiate the media plan. Here's how you do the retail math behind that. Here's how you work with everyone else has to be involved, from producer to editor to everyone across campus that needs to review and look at the script, and even including them. So the entire thing. Then we get on the set, and I wanted to model for everybody on the set. Like, here's, like, while it's your project, you've just hired a great director, you've hired a great producer. Here's how you stay out of the way, but you support, and you don't show up and take over the set, right? Here's how you do it. And then here's how it works in post-production, and here's how it works in measurement. Now, I modeled that for everybody the first time. Now, my expectation the next time is, and by the way, everyone had a blast because they were learning. Who doesn't like to learn? And who doesn't like to have someone teach you something new, right? Because you get better. And so this next round, right, we're setting up the process. I set up the framework, and now I say, hey, Anna, here we go. I need you to call XYZ production company, and let's get the process started. I will step back. I'll stay involved, but I'll step back and watch and see how they take all the stuff that I showed them how to do and then apply it. So empowering for me when someone does that for me and they teach me how to do it, and now I have a new skill. I'm grateful to them for doing that for me because I like to learn and I get better. So I think that's the essence of the questions you're asking, which is the ability, number one, to be able to learn, think, listen, and then scale yourself. Because that's what a leader really needs to do is be able to, you need to be able to be in six or seven places at one time with actually being there.
I love the scale yourself. We could probably unpack that for a whole nother episode because that's the first time I've heard that. And I got a lot of thoughts going on, but I do want to talk about, you know, you mentioned like when you got that call about going back to the, you know, to the university, right? And being an alum, and you were in pro sports for pretty much your entire career for the most part, right? Before that. And so then going back to college athletics, that's kind of called that assist, you know, as an alum, right? Like that's that call that you ride into the sunset kind of thing potentially. And when you think about the differences between pro sports, college athletics, where we're at now, the things that you're working on, what does someone need to know about, hey, this is what the landscape of college athletics looks like from a professional standpoint of opportunities. Here's where pro sports is kind of going. But let's stick on the college athletic side first. You know, obviously there's NIL that's impacting in a lot of different ways, from not only the student athlete development side, the student athlete services, but also, you know, the fundraising side, right? Sponsorships, and just across the board. And not to mention at the level that you're at Ohio State and the profile, right? That you have to uphold. Just talk a little bit about that role right now, where it's going, and to your point of earlier, the point of view of where's it going in the next 5 years?
Yeah. So just a little funny aside, sometimes I ask if I actually made it anywhere because I get up and I drive past my dorm and I'm like, I'm in the same spot I was so many years ago going to work. I'm looking at my dorm every day out of my office window, which is wild. So I think the difference between college athletics and professional athletics is a big one, and that is decision-making rights. And so when we're working on a project, the amount of people that have to be involved or think they need to be involved on a campus is large, from, you know, board of trustees. I had a presentation with our president in the cabinet last week, and you have to bring people along in a way that can, for some, if you're not comfortable in knowing how to do this, it can be uncomfortable. Again, going back to the agency space, I had to do that for multiple companies all the time. And so laying out a vision, laying out a plan for the top level people, the president, and then also saying, okay, what does this mean to President Carter in terms of his relationship with the Board of Trustees, right? Or what does it mean for Gene Smith or Ross Bjork, our new incoming athletic director, for all the other things that they might be managing that I have no idea about, right? Other relationships, other deals, other issues on campus that I don't know. Or for Elizabeth Parkinson, who oversees our marketing communications for the entire campus, there may be issues related to something that I'm not aware of that we're working through. So you have to bring a lot of people along. You have to be a great communicator, and you have to build relationships with those folks that they know the level of expertise that you have, and they know that there's a trust that you're going to bring those issues to them. So the idea of alignment, collaboration, and transparency in the college space is really, really important. And quite frankly, I'm seeing a number of folks in that athletic director's chair getting caught right now because all the changes taking place with NIL and prosperity, what I call revenue sharing and prosperity that's coming down the pike, they might not be doing a great job or have the relationship or the infrastructure to keep all those other people I just discussed in the know and in a line, and or have those relationships where they can have incredible trusting relationships where they can communicate in an effective way. In professional sports, I literally would just sit in a room with a president and the owner and they say, well, this is what we want to do, go do it. And we would go, right? Like, here's an idea, go do it. Come back and tell us, did it work? Come back, tell us how much money you need to go actually work on the project and tell us what the ROI is going to be. How's it going to benefit our fans? What does this mean to our community? Does this increase the value of our franchise? Okay, awesome, go. That's not how it works in college. So even I'll give you this, right? Like I spend a lot of time thinking about new models and working with private equity and a whole bunch of other folks that look at our business and to say, hey, we might not be fully monetizing ticket sales or ticket value and price for Ohio State and for football games. Well, you may actually know what the true answer is by doing a financial model, but the Board of Trustees are the ones that are going to tell you if you can or cannot raise your ticket prices. So what does that mean then when Gene or Ross have to operate the business and there's constraints between revenue coming in and the amount of expenses that come up, right? So that's a big difference in college athletics. By the way, we also have 36 head coaches who all manage and run their sports. And so like that's 36 other bosses that you've got to talk to, not only to mention the concert businesses and everything else that we've got going on.
Well, that's 36 businesses too, underneath one business, right? I mean, like ultimately you've got a P&L for every single sport that they're managing. And I mean,
Jake, sometimes it's just an L, brother, for some of these sports.
Said you like to win, but sometimes you just got to take the losses where you know, right?
Sometimes it's just from a financial standpoint for some of those sports, it's just an L. Yeah.
Laura, what do you got?
I think it's so interesting, and I would argue it's more like 38 brands, right? Because you've got the individual sports, then you've got the university, you've got the athletic department as a brand. But then in addition to that, I think you have, I would argue that you have like, then there's the hospital. It's like everything that has the Ohio State name on it is its own its own brand. And so when you look at as a person who's in college and they're looking for opportunities to a lot of times we hear and we know this, right? Like when you're in college or when you're in grad school, you look at jobs and you look at job titles and like they put that. This is something I think we talk about often, Jake, is like, don't put the emphasis on the title, put the emphasis on the work. Like you're working across 38 plus brands on a day-to-day basis, which makes my head hurt just thinking about it. Talk a little bit about some of the fun things that are coming up that you're excited about in your specific area of that. We'll just call it 40. Just round up.
So what's really fun in college right now and in the space, and then we'll talk maybe a little about what's happening in the professional athletics landscape as well, but in our space, and we're extremely privileged and fortunate at Ohio State to have a brand that matters across the country, largest football fan base in college athletics, and we've done a really great job over a century of building this brand. What's fun is when we think about like what the art of the possible is and where else can the brand go? Where do people trust you, right? So like from a trademark and licensing standpoint, what else can you build? What else can you provide? What else can you deliver even outside of sports that is sports adjacent that people will say, you know what? Ohio State is their brands on it. I will do that. I will follow that. There's some things I can share, some things I can't share, but you know, imagine if we had this really great suite of fitness centers around Ohio State that were tangentially connected to our athletic program and our trainers and former student athletes, and you build a franchise model out of that. Those are the kind of things that are interesting. Imagine if you had a better suite of content offerings that were associated with Ohio State that were that was content driven. Last year we started this, we'll continue this year. We open up our football training camp, right? And there will be like, we sell that out, right? We sell that out to our fans. They come and watch our first couple, four games, our four practices for football training camp. Not many schools do that yet or can do that. In the apparel and retail space, you know, we're thinking about what that experience can look like. For those, I guess, to educate you all and the listeners, when you look at the amount of retail and hard goods that Ohio State University sells on an annual basis, it's within the top quartile of NFL teams. It's a big, big brand. It's a big, big business. And so thinking about how we do a better job, if I see one more polo, one more fleece, one more t-shirt, I'm going to lose my mind. They're really important, but like, we know what our women fans and donors and alumni want, right? They want something that's a little bit more elevated that they can wear to work, that they can wear on everyday occasions. So like, how do we start thinking about different audiences with inside that one audience of who wants to wear our apparel and build a business? And finally, I'd say this, and if you all had a chance to talk to any of the folks from a business standpoint that we work with as our affinity partners, our licensees, they would tell you the one thing that I think we appreciate most about Ohio State is like the last thing we always ask folks is, how are we helping your business move forward in a measurable way? How can we measure that? Like, tell us, did your business get better because you're working with Ohio State? If it hasn't, our team knows we've got to work harder. We're not here necessarily we're here to protect the Ohio State brand and optimize the Ohio State brand. We are here with our business partners to move their business forward in a meaningful and measurable way, whether that's improved brand positioning and perception. And hopefully from a financial standpoint, we want them to make as much money as they can. That's what keeps business going. And by the way, when that happens, guess how easy it is to have the next conversation about what are we going to do next? So those are the kind of things we're working on.
As you think about helping other brands, and then you think about your own brand, and then you think about your athletes and their own brands.
Yeah. And,
I mean, Laura, you talk about 40 brands. It's 40 brands plus however many student athletes you have too, right? And so what are the things that you've even just learned in the last year or two about other athletes' brands, how they're going about it, even within just how you're building your own brand, right? And within the industry and those sorts of things.
So Jake, this is probably the first time I'm going to mention this publicly, but like, I'm also an NIL agent because we have a daughter who's an SEC gymnast. So all her deals have to run through me, and it's been incredible, right? Like, I get to have this at night, have this fun little conversation. And so the NCAA regional championships are this week for gymnastics, and they're not on ESPN. And all of a sudden I'm like, so they're on ESPN Plus, which is great. But the dad and agent side of me, quasi agent, right, was like, wait a minute, that's holding back all those young ladies' visibility, right? I'm like, it's got to be on ESPN. It's got to be on broadcast. Like, I'm fighting for that, right? So the thing that I've learned the most, and I think we see this with Caitlin Clark, I already knew it, but when you see it stand itself up the way that it has, and I had this conversation with one of our star women's basketball players last summer. When you're on broadcast television and the whole country's seeing you, man, that's powerful. Boy, is that powerful for your individual brand. And as students start to think about, they're going to have to really, some of the more valuable students in NIL space are going to really have to think about what school I'm going to go perform at and be a student athlete at based on the kind of exposure that they're going to get if they're best positioned to take advantage of that. And so, you know, Caitlin Clark has done a phenomenal job. We talked earlier off before the show started about women's basketball. I can name more women's basketball players in college today than I can men. Now, I pay a lot of attention to women's sports, but I think the national broadcasts have really helped that sport. And so what I've learned, what I've had to relearn, and i.e. marketing agency guy, of course, you know this, the power of media and the power of earned media and the power of broadcast media and the power of great storytelling inside those broadcasts are really important for students in terms of building their brand.
Right on. And I think when you mentioned previously about two words, imagine and measurement. And I think especially we're seeing this in the NIL space and in the college space and just quite frankly the brand space, you have to be able to imagine what doesn't exist, but you have to be able to measure that. And when you have those two things, you can see success like we're seeing on the women's side of sport. We knew the numbers, we were able to measure, right? We know from an agency, from a brand side, that brands are looking for eyeballs. Eyeballs turn into conversions, turn into actual decision-making and buying and purchasing. Like that's the cycle. And so understanding where the hitch is in that cycle, i.e. media, storytelling, exposure, when you see it, it's like all of these things, it's a circle. We see these things and it's the more stories we can get out there, the more media we can get around it, the more people can watch it, the opportunity, they will watch it because it is amazing. It's electrifying. It's energetic. Not just because I am the women's sports advocate on this call, but there's a business case there for it, right? And I think we're seeing that. If you could say, because I keep getting this question from college students, specifically college athletes, knowing what you know from a student athlete into working in professional sports, working in an agency, all of your business acumen up until now, what are two things that you would tell college athletes right now about their brand?
Yeah, that's a good, great question, Laura. I would say really refine your story. What is your story? That's really hard. It's hard for people who our age, right? My age. But as an 18-year-old, really understand your story so that you can articulate that and what makes you somewhat different or interesting in a different way. But know your story. And then be willing to share it, right? Like be willing to share it. Like here's who I am, and don't compromise who you are for a deal. Just be yourself. If deals come, great. If they don't, great. But just be yourself and you'll be fine. But know your story. The worst thing you could do as a student athlete is to try to conform to something because you want a deal, and then that thing falls all the way apart. You'd lose trust with your audience. You're not going to ever get another deal. So just be yourself, and opportunities will come. And most importantly, perform. Most importantly, perform. Be great at what you do. First and foremost, don't compromise that. That's what gets everybody's attention is that your ability to perform at a high level.
Kevin, as we wrap up the episode and we'll get to rapid fire here in a second. I want to go back to your time as a student athlete and think about even like how it's changed to now. And obviously there's an immense amount that has changed, but if you could go back to, hey, this is the one lesson that I learned as a student athlete that's helped me in business today, what would the lesson that you learned as a student athlete be that has helped you along your career?
Yeah. So it's two things. Be incredibly self-aware. My first play I had after we broke freshman camp, and then we had the upperclassmen come in, somehow I ended up having to block Mike Vrabel, and that was the worst. Like I was clearly self-aware at that moment, like that was terrible. So let's go find another position for you, Kev, like that, go out there and catch passes. So being self-aware and where you fit in. And I'll never forget after my sophomore year, I was like, you know what, if I'm going to actually play at Ohio State, I got to figure it out. So I'm going to be the very best on special teams. Nobody's going to be better than me ever. And I did it. And I became our special teams captain, but I wasn't going to go be a 1,000-yard receiver. That wasn't going to be me, but nobody was going to work harder and be better at that part of the craft than I was. And I was able to do that. So self-awareness. And number two, being able to have relationships with a lot of different people. So I spent a lot of time with our coaches to talk about things around the strategy of football. I spent a lot of time with the linebackers who still to this day are good friends. the running, I could, who, it didn't matter your background, your race, whatever you were doing, I could be around them all and have good relationships. And I think that has paid off. It's paid dividends to this day. A lot of my, I have friends that were on the team that are in different worlds and are different parts of the world and different backgrounds. And that's been really important. So being self-aware and being able to communicate with a lot of different people.
Love it. Laura, rapid fire. Here we go.
Rapid fire. We need to start. Do we ever get that song up, Jake? We need to get the pew, pew, pew.
Yeah, we'll get that going.
Okay, rapid fire questions. Kevin, these are quick hit questions that may or may have absolutely nothing to do with sports and or your job or any topics we've covered this far, but they're just fun. Okay. So we know, for those who don't know, Kevin's wife, an amazing athlete, and we're going to use present tense, was a Ohio State gymnast, amazing top tier athlete. So in your house on Saturday, and your sons play football.
Yeah.
Got a football game on and you got a gymnastics meet on.
Yeah, it's always football. Yeah. It's always football. I wish I could be more entertaining, but and by the way, it's my wife or my mother-in-law or my daughter who's saying we're watching football.
Love it. Yeah. Love it.
Kevin, if there was a different sport you could have played in college, what would it have been?
Baseball.
What position?
I love playing center field and tracking down the balls, but I wish I would have been better at baseball. My younger brother could hit jacks when we were growing up. Like, he would smoke it, and I could never hit a home run, and I was so jealous of him. I don't even know if he knows that, but, like, I'm still to this day jealous that he could hit home runs and I could not.
Okay, back to OU and the glorious place of Athens. Are you going to Pigskin? Or are you going to Bronies?
So you're not going to like this answer, but I would have gone to neither. I used to spend too much time at the BW3s on the corner. And so the BW3s and wings and beer. You guys might not know this, but there used to be, I cannot remember the name of it. There was a drive-through. Do you remember the drive-through where you could drive through and pick up your beer in the car?
Yeah,
that was my jam.
That is an Ohio exclusive. I don't know if they have those parts of the country. I always thought it was normal. We had one here in Columbus, right outside of the soccer field. So you just drove through, got your Gatorade, and everybody else, the adults, got what they wanted. You could always tell whose parents forgot it was their day for snacks.
Yeah. They're going through the drive-thru. I was not picking up snacks at the drive-thru, my friend. Yeah.
Kevin, if there's a stadium that you haven't been to yet to see a sporting event, what's the one you're going to go to?
In the world.
In the world, that's a good question. I'm probably going to Wembley. Yeah, since you opened it up globally, domestically, it would have been SoFi.
SoFi is pretty cool.
Yeah, SoFi is cool. I think we can make that happen, Kevin. I feel we should be able to make that happen in 2024. Listeners, can we get Kevin Griffin to SoFi Stadium, please?
Yes.
And thank you. What is, in your brain, and this is me, Jake, you will like this question because this is more up your alley of not an either or. What is the next upcoming sport that people don't know about yet?
That's a great question. So people know about pickleball, right? That's a huge business. And I think people know about frisbee golf, but I feel like that has a chance to take off a little bit more. But I think people know about it. But frisbee golf, like, if you have access and you play, it's incredibly fun.
Yeah.
The froth is real.
Yeah. Yeah.
Froth, Jake? Froth. Is that what you – froth?
Yeah. Frisbee golf. Froth.
What? Why? It has two words for a reason. We don't need to merge it into one.
Yeah.
Rolf?
Yeah, why not?
I've got lost on a frisbee golf course one time, unintentionally. I was in a park walking the dog, and the next thing you know, I'm just looking for open space, and I'm seeing frisbees go across.
Yeah, absolutely.
frisbee golf. Right.
Kevin, last one for you. Is there a sport on campus that is like an underrated event? Like outside of football, basketball, those are, you know, great experiences, right? You're going to some event on campus. What are you doing?
So our women's hockey team, they just won a national championship. And Nadine, who's our coach, is just incredible leader. And the energy in which these young ladies play is outstanding. So I would say the women's hockey experience at Ohio State, when you want to see high level, is incredible. Championship level, incredible. And to watch someone who's a tactician and a leader like Nadine is really beautiful. They skate for, as you guys know, you skate for 45 seconds all out, and you're tired, and you shift change, and here comes the next group. And so that would be the sport.
Very cool. Kevin, really appreciate all of the perspectives, insights, advice nonetheless, and all, you know, your journey, sharing your story. Appreciate it. You're welcome on anytime, of course. And thanks for being a part of the Ohio University Sports Administration series, Life After Court Street.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Great job, you all.
Hey everyone, thanks for listening to today's episode, and I just want to give a quick shout out to ScreenSkins, our presenting sponsor of the Teamwork Online webinar series, the number one branded screen protector that allows you to personalize your screen protector for custom or officially licensed designs that disappear. Get yours today by visiting screenskins.com and use the code LIFO24 at checkout for 20% off today. LIFO24 at screenskins.com at checkout for 20% off. Thanks, everyone.